planning for end-of-life issues, new nurse delivers, shutting down nursing schools, and we'll take a look at EKG reading. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's The Nursing Show. Well, good day and welcome to The Nursing Show. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the pod medic, and I'd like to welcome everybody to this week's show. We are going to be looking at all of those issues I just talked about, but I want to first remind all of you to make sure you head over and check out nursingshow.com. Over at nursingshow.com, you'll find links to all of the information we talk about in each and every episode, as well as other articles, links, and resources available just for you. So head over and check it out now, nursingshow.com. I want to, first off, thank our listener, Kirsten. Kirsten sent in a correction on last week's show. I was talking about meningitis and talked a little bit about intracranial pressure increases, and I talked about Cushing's triad, and I made a mistake when I talked about Cushing's triad, and I mistakenly said that one of the signs was increased heart rate or tachycardia. Actually, I was wrong. It was decreased heart rate, bradycardia, and Kirsten caught up with me on that and let me know by email at comments@nursingshow.com, and I was able to put a posting up in the show notes for that episode and make sure that I got that out here to you today. So remember, Cushing's triad is how vital signs present when you have a patient experiencing intracranial pressure, and you're looking at an increased, often severely increased blood pressure. You'll see a widening pulse pressure, and that means an increased systolic and decreasing diastolic blood pressure numbers, widening pulse pressure. You're also going to see a decreased heart rate, bradycardia, which is what I got wrong, and finally, you're going to see a slowed or erratic respiratory rate. And again, this is because of the pressure being put on the respiratory centers in the brain. All of these things are signs of increased pressure in the cranial cavity and in cases of meningitis due to the infection there. Kirsten, thank you very much for your comment and your correction. I'd love to hear from everybody. So if you've got a correction, a suggestion, a comment, something you'd like to hear more about, go ahead and shoot me an email to comments@nursingshow.com, and I'll be sure to get back to you right away. And also sometimes thank you here directly on the show. Before I get too much farther, I do need to thank the folks that help make this show possible. And that, of course, is our generous sponsors. Time now to jump in and take a look at the news, and I'm going to lead off with a story I picked up at medicalnewstoday.com. This is a story talking about people having a need to plan for the inevitable or perhaps the unthinkable in some cases, and that is their ability or their healthcare prospects after they've reached a point where they can no longer make decisions for themselves. This is not something that people like to think about, and it's been shown that a lot of healthcare professionals don't like to talk about this with their patients. And I can understand that, but it's still part of a healthcare program. And we need to help people make good decisions and understand their wishes before they reach a point in a catastrophic emergency where they can no longer make decisions for themselves. And we provide healthcare in a way that they didn't wish to have it provided. So one of the things that has come about is some organizations at the national level have come together and put together some guidelines called Advanced Care Planning Guidelines from a group of organizations to help healthcare professionals like nurses, physicians, and others to talk about with their patients and also when and how to talk about with their patients these issues. And so this particular document is going to provide some of those resources to help them record advanced care directives in order to perhaps refuse treatment or to outline specific levels of treatment should they be not able to make those decisions themselves at the time. Now, some of these things would be an advanced statement of wishes and preferences, an advanced decision to review certain types of treatments, such as a do not resuscitate order, and the designation of a person who would hold power of attorney to make decisions for you if you could not. All of these things are part of the package that's put together here. Follow the link in the show notes for more information. And if you deal with patients who are looking at end-of-life issues or just want to plan better, I think that this is something that patients of all ages should be able to assemble and have as part of their health record. We'll move on to a bit of a heartwarming story from some of that talk of death and dying. This was a story I found about a brand new nurse, a woman from Colorado who had just passed her nursing boards and was traveling to North Dakota to visit her sister-in-law when that sister-in-law, who was pregnant, went into active labor. Now, this brand new nurse stepped into action while they waited for emergency responders to arrive, assisting her sister-in-law to lie down on the floor in the bathroom and help with the delivery of her brand new niece. And I think that's, you know, exciting. You don't often expect to put your nursing skills to use in such a way, especially so soon right after school in a non-traditional setting like that. But she was able to get things resolved pretty well, and the mother and child were transported by ambulance to the local hospital in Fargo. Mom, baby, and of course, the intrepid aunt are all doing very well, and I just wanted to give her a nursing show kudos for doing such a great job and putting her nursing skills to work in a difficult and unusual situation. Finally, I'll wrap up with an interesting story I found that really looks at something that I don't think I've seen come across the radar here recently. You know, as we talk about the nursing shortage and the fact that nursing schools around the country are ramping up their nursing programs, this interesting story that I found in several news sources has the University of Florida talking to their College of Education and the College of Nursing to submit proposals about whether or not it would be a good idea to get rid of their undergraduate programs in those areas. Now, I'm just kind of floored by this because you don't produce enough nurses and you don't produce enough teachers, both professions, in the midst of this recession that are having no trouble hiring because there are still shortages of both nurses and teachers. And the University of Florida is considering cutting those two colleges. And they're the only two colleges that have been asked to present their proposals. It seems very odd to me and really out of place with what I would expect in the current climate for nursing education. And I don't see any good reason for it. I know there's budget cuts and things are tightening up all around, but it really is something very unusual. Now, a spokesman for the University of Florida says that they're shifting their focus to a focus on graduate level education of students. But I still have to think that getting rid of an undergraduate teaching and nursing program is not the first program that you should consider cutting in that situation. I don't know what the reasoning for it is. It doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense, but it's something that cropped up on my radar and made me raise an eyebrow or two. I'd love to hear your response to this. Perhaps you're a nurse in Florida or have some insight on why the University of Florida would consider canceling or getting rid of their nursing education program, at least at the undergraduate level. But until then, I guess I'll have to let this go. So remember, you can send in comments by sending an email to comments@nursingshow.com, or you can also head over and leave a comment right at the Nursing Show blog for the link at the bottom of these show notes. So go ahead and do that right now. So I'm going to jump in here on ECG reading, and as some of you may know, if you're shifting over from the MedicCast show, where I've been producing a show for EMTs and paramedics for the last couple of years, you'll know that I've been a paramedic for almost 10 years now, and have been dealing with cardiac and critical care patients in the field for quite some time.
First of all, I want to say that if you haven't been reading ECGs before, or if it's been a long time, you need to understand that this is one of those things that is definitely a practice makes perfect project. When you get out there and you're learning to read ECGs for the first time, you really need to be systematic in your approach and take your steps, write them down, and follow each step methodically. And when you get to the other side, you should be able to then apply the findings of those steps to find what rhythm you're looking at. Over time, some of the rhythms will start to leap out at you, and you'll be able to look at a page and say, oh, that's this. Or you'll only need to go through a few steps of the step-by-step process to arrive at a conclusion about the rhythm. But until then, and especially when you look at rhythms that are more difficult to read, it still needs to be a systematic top-to-bottom approach, and following each step in line, in order, and arriving at your decision in that manner. And that's something that I do all the time. There are rhythms out there, you know, people don't present the same way all the time. And so there are rhythms that just don't look right, or they're combination rhythms that are difficult to read. And when you run up into them, even to this day, I still go back to the same old steps of being methodical in my approach to reading my cardiac rhythms. First off, I want to point out that in the show notes for this episode over at nursingshow.com, I've got some links to some excellent online resources and tutorial information that will help you out with reading ECGs in your particular venue. And what you need to remember is this is something you just need to keep reading them. You just need to read a lot of ECGs until you get good at it and you get used to the process and used to recognizing things. And there's just no substitute for that. So there are lots of great books that are full of sample ECGs out there. There are lots of sites where you can download PDFs of sample ECGs to look at and sample exercises. I've put a few of them up here. These are all free resources, so I urge you to check it out. One of them's from the University of Utah Medical School with one of the former professors there. They have like a memorial site up towards his cardiology practice and looking at all of the tools he assembled over the course of his teaching career. And there's a lot of great information there. Also at skillstat.com, which is a site that sells some tools for learning and teaching ECG reading. They also have some excellent free resources available on their website. And at Merck.com, which is a drug manufacturer, they have some animations of cardiac animations and ECG animations that may be of help to you. Specifically, the page that you land at when you click that link will actually show you an animation of a heart pumping and show you which portions of the EKG happen during each phase of the cardiac pump movement. So you should be able to use that as well to kind of help line up your understanding of anatomy and physiology with the reading of the EKG. Now, the EKG is all about electricity, and you need to remember that the size of the wave is based on the size of the muscle that is moving it, so that the ventricles are going to be making your larger waves, your QRS complexes, and your atria are going to be creating the smaller waves, as well as the repolarization that occurs during the T wave. And it's also important to remember that just like if you're taking a photograph and someone who's taller than you moves and stands in front of you, you are hidden from view, you are still there. And in fact, if you stick your hand out, this person will look like they are growing an extra arm and it will change their shape. Much the same way that the shape of a QRS complex might be changed if there's another event going on behind it that's different from the other things in the strip. So these are things you need to remember, that just because something is covering up something else doesn't mean that the other event, like the atria or the P wave, isn't occurring. You also need to understand the cardiac conduction of the heart. You have the sinoatrial node, the SA node, the atrioventricular node, the AV node. Then you have your bundle of His and your bundle branches that move down and then come back up through the bottom of the ventricles to create the Purkinje fibers that transmit all of that power to the ventricles and tell those muscles to contract. And whenever you look at a strip from left to right, it is a passage of time. So whenever something has a longer distance between it, that is an indication that something is delaying conduction. The heart has normal delays built into conduction, but sometimes those delays can be increased through the death of cardiac muscle as the result of a heart attack, or as the result of some medication side effects causing delays in conduction. So these are things that you need to be aware of as well. I'm not going to cover P waves, QRS waves, or T waves. You'll need to go to one of the websites and learn the particular parts of the EKG if you haven't already done so. But let's move on into some of the basic steps needed for examining and analyzing EKGs. First off, you want to start off with determining how fast the rate is. And you can do this simply by counting the QRS complexes in a 6-second strip and multiplying them by 10. Okay, this is very simple and easy to do. Determine the ventricular rate. Okay, you're going to start off there. You're going to count them, get your rate. This may or may not correlate with what pulse reading you've gotten on the patient. It may or may not correlate with the atrial rate, but at least determine the basic rate you're looking at and decide, is it too fast, is it too slow, or is it just right? Kind of perform the Goldilocks maneuver, I like to call it, where you try to decide if this is a normal rate for a person to have. You're also going to then determine if it's regular or irregular. You know, do we have a normal beating pattern that is pretty regular all the way across? And this can be done as simply as taking a blank piece of paper and lining up on top of your rhythm and drawing a hash mark at the top of each QRS complex and then going down the line and measuring them. And if they're all pretty much the same, then you can say this is a regular rhythm. If, however, there is not regularity and you seem like there's a lot of variability in the distance between the complexes, then you need to determine if it's a regular pattern of irregularity or regularly irregular, or if there is no pattern and it's just completely random in the way that the beats are happening, in which case that would be irregularly irregular. You also want to look at your P waves and do the same thing. Is there a P wave rate? Okay, does that P wave rate correspond to the ventricular rate? And also, is there a regular rhythm to the P waves? Are they regular or are they regularly irregular or irregularly irregular, just like the ventricular rate? You're also going to want to look at some of the intervals, the width of the QRS complex and the P to R interval. And these are important things because they'll tell you about conduction delays that are occurring within the heart that are normal or abnormal. In your QRS interval, you want your QRS complexes to be narrow. From the beginning of the QRS complex to the end of the QRS complex, you want it to be less than 0.12 seconds. If you are looking at the P to R interval, and that is measured from the beginning of the P wave to the beginning of the QRS complex, you want that to be between 0.12 and 0.2 seconds. These intervals will tell you if there's a normal delay pattern in the cardiac muscle and the conduction pathways. Finally, you want to make sure there is a correlation, or if there isn't a correlation, what's going on between the P waves and the QRS complexes. And this is really just looking at, is there a P wave before every QRS complex? And also, is there a QRS complex after every P wave? So once you've determined these things, and there's about 10 to 12 different things you're looking at there, you're going to answer all these questions. And I urge you when you're first starting out to write them down, write the answers down, yes or no, what the rate is, you know, answer those questions. And then when you're finished, you can start looking at what rhythm, what official EKG rhythm or ECG rhythm you're looking at. As for this show, we'll save that information for a future episode. So stay tuned for another tip and trick of the week coming up soon on ECG Reading.
That's going to wrap up another episode of The Nursing Show. I want to remind everyone to check out the show notes for this episode, where you will find links to everything we discussed. The news article links are there, as well as other additional resource links for EKG reading, all available at nursingshow.com in the podcast category. You'll find links to all the other podcast information there as well. Also, don't forget other articles and links put up throughout the course of the week, so you'll want to make sure you check back at The Nursing Show often. That's it for me. I'll wrap up with some PodSafe music, and I think this week I'll go back to a tried and true song from the past. This is Not on the Radio by Jeff Smith. If you like what you hear, you can head out and check Jeff's other music out at thejeffsmith.com, and that's GEOFF Smith.com. Or you can follow the link in the show notes. There's an iTunes button there that you can go and check out his music at the iTunes store and purchase it if you want. But all of that's available in the show notes for this episode. In the meantime, I will leave you with the message I always do. I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, reminding all of you to remember to stay safe and stay tuned here to The Nursing Show. Take care.
Somebody told me you're in San Francisco. They said you're working in a box,
yeah, a cubicle.
Somebody told me that you're not on top of the world. You're probably walking down the street with your earbuds jammed so deep in your ear,
yeah, you're going deaf.
You probably found this little MP3 for free. Way cooler out there,
yeah, I think so.
But maybe you just like it in your cozy little world. Well, you can play this, but not on the radio. I made this just so I can let it go. Does anyone around here still have a radio? Out in Wheeling, West Virginia, we can make it on our own,
and we're doing just fine.
I can't afford your record, but it's out of sight. Well, you can play this, but not on the radio. I made this, but not for the radio. Hey now, switch off your